we can all relate to putting ourselves in boxes, whether they're social media squares, you know, your grid for other people to consume, or those like proverbial societal expectations and containers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that feeling of like, who am I without these boxes to check?
Mm-hmm.
It can be really big, especially during transitional times.
Hi, hello. Welcome to Mary's Cup of Tea, the self-love podcast for women, though all self-lovers are welcome here. I'm Mary. I write and speak about self-love, and I'm best known for my book, The Gift of Self-Love, and I also host retreats for women. And this is the podcast that will inspire you to love yourself. Real quick, before we dive in, I want to make sure you know about my book, The Gift of Self-Love. It's a workbook to help you build confidence, recognize your worth, and learn to love who you are. It's available anywhere books are sold. Thousands of people have it, love it, and have told me that it has greatly benefited their self-love journey, and I hope it'll do the same for you. And now let's get into the podcast. If you've historically struggled with food and body image, perhaps you're a fellow eating disorder recovery warrior who's gone on her own journey of healing and growth and self-love, then you might find yourself asking existential questions like, who am I when this thing that I've made my entire identity revolve around no longer controls me? Who am I without the struggle with food and body image, and then also the recovery from food and body image, which is what a big part of my late teens and early 20s has been. So this experience of feeling lost and then being like, what the heck just happened? What do I do with my time now? How do you move forward when hopefully and thankfully food, body image, or any kind of mental health struggle no longer controls as much of your life? That's what my friend Jessie Jean and I talk about in this episode. It's actually a reverse interview where Jessie had me on her podcast, but now a year later, I asked if I could reshare it here on Mary's Cup of Tea for you. I think these reverse interviews are so fun because you get to hear like a different side of me. And Jessie and I know each other in real life too. So we very much talk openly, candidly. It's so fun and natural. You'll hear about my personal journey toward recovery, how I feel about it now, navigating identity and purpose, building community and friendships as an adult, which can be so hard and is a big part of like feeling lost. It comes with its own loneliness, right? When you outgrow those old people that you might not vibe with as much anymore. How do you make new friends? How do you strengthen friendships? Jessie is such a great coach, not just with body image and binge eating, but also mindset overall. She gives us this very powerful shift called acting as if. You'll hear more about it toward the end. So whether you're trying to level up your friendships or figure out who you are now, this episode is packed with practical tips, personal stories, and hopefully a little wisdom from two gals who are, mind you, very much still figuring it out. Jessie actually just announced a career shift, which I think is so cool and courageous. I can't wait to follow her more on that journey of moving away from binge eating recovery coaching. I mean, talk about practicing what she preaches in terms of letting yourself evolve. So I just think that is so cool. I love this conversation. I'm excited to relive it here with you. And real quick, before we dive in, something that's been on my mind and heart lately, I came across this quote that said something along the lines of, what a privilege, what a luxury it is to be able to experience feeling lost, you know, existential dread. Who am I? What do I do with my life? I mean, that stuff keeps me up at night, but seeing it positioned as like, wait, that's like the highest tip of the pyramid of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where you actually have the time and space and resources to think about something like self-actualization, you know, because you're not in survival mode. And a lot of people in this world right now are very much in survival mode. And don't have even the capacity or the slightest thought of thinking about, like, what is my identity? Because they're just trying to keep their families safe and feed them and might be struggling too. So with that in mind, like, I'm not saying this to minimize any experience that you might be having right now, but I just wanted to put it out there because I found that it was like such a quick reframe of feeling lost and having an identity crisis and asking yourself existential questions like, wow, what a privilege, what a luxury, how lucky am I to be able to have the opportunity to even think this way because I'm not in survival mode. Okay, now let's get into this conversation with my friend Jessie about feeling lost and finding yourself and your people after eating disorder recovery.
There's this kind of interesting phenomena, and that's this pipeline of healing your relationship with food and body image insecurities, which can take a concerted and focused effort to coming out on the other side of that. You experience this incredible period of rich relief and freedom. But that can sometimes be followed by a period of feeling lost. And so, Mary, I want to kind of go there today. I don't think this is talked about quite enough. You went through this intense journey of healing your relationship with food and body image. You've transformed into this self-love queen who hosts self-love retreats. You've written self-love books. You've built a platform on social media and your podcast, which has come with various business opportunities that I definitely want to get into. But I'm curious, what was the moment when you thought, holy shit, I've actually done it. I'm on the other side of my struggles with food and body image.
I think the short answer would be every time I eat something that used to be a binge food, like almond butter or cereal or ice cream, every time I have something like that and don't have any urge to binge whatsoever, or just sits in my pantry for months on end and somehow I don't feel drawn to that food. It's definitely like when I realize it, I'm like, wow, like I've come so far to a point where from the moment of battling a jar of peanut butter and spraying it with Lysol to prevent myself from digging it out of the trash to now having it just like coexist with me without any type of stress or anxiety or intense attraction to it. So that would be the short answer. But to make a short story long, which is my new motto.
I love it.
I'm always so insecure about how much I talk. And so I try to say long story short, but it never goes my favor. So I'm like, I'm just going to double down.
My husband always gives me this look when I'm telling stories and I'm like, oh shit, there I go again. I'm making this way too detailed. And he's like, just get to the point.
And that's why podcasting was made for us.
Yeah, exactly.
But going off of that, you know, also anytime there's a big event, you know, and I don't feel I'm not like compelled to diet for a deadline, so to speak. Like, for example, my wedding was last year, my honeymoon. And again, none of those like food or body image or weight loss compulsions were a part of my reality. But a big moment for me, like if I were to, I don't know, tell a story in a longer version, last year I had Dr. Anita Johnston on my podcast and she owns a eating disorder recovery center in Hawaii. She's an incredible psychologist. I think she's in her mid to late 70s. So somebody who's been doing this for so many decades and has treated some of like the most intense eating disorders like inpatient. She might be familiar to some of our listeners because she's the author of the book Eating in the Light of the Moon, which is an older book. And it's a little bit like spiritual, mystical woo-woo, but it is also like so magical in that sense too. But anyway, I had the honor of having her on the podcast and I asked her this like very controversial question in the eating disorder recovery community. And that question is it possible to be recovered past tense? Like not in recovery, because you know, in the addict recovery, alcoholic recovery, like you kind of always have to be admitting to yourself that you're in recovery, that you're an addict, that you're an alcoholic. And I'm sure that works for some people and I'm sure it doesn't for others. I don't know. Everybody is entitled to their own opinion and whatever works for them. But I really wanted to hear her perspective on how this applies in eating disorder recovery specifically. And her answer verbatim, I went back to the clip to accurately retell it for you here. She goes, recovered, period, end of story, past tense.
Yeah, amen to that.
Amen to that, right? And came with such a like relief and validation because I definitely felt recovered. Like, I don't think I needed that validation necessarily, but having a professional that is so wise, a sage in the space, so to speak, say that it is possible for this to be completely in the past. And, you know, it sounds like that's where you are. And it was just very validating. And it gave me permission to be recovered in the past tense and not have it be a part of my present identity.
I love that so much. And I think that I agree with that 110%, because for me, I feel like my struggles, like that version of myself who struggled with food and these impulses and these deep-seated body image insecurities. Like, don't get me wrong, I still have, you know, bad body image days, but like the struggle with food, it's that version of myself feels like a lifetime ago. It feels like I have a hard time even relating to that version of myself because it's so different and it's so distant and it's such a foreign thing to think about. And when you're in it, it like that's hard to almost believe, truthfully. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, for me, I don't think there was one specific point where it was like a holy shit moment. I'm actually on the other side. But I think, like you were saying, there's these experiences where you're like, okay, I don't feel compelled to need to diet down for my wedding, or I can, you know, leave food in the pantry and forget about it for months. Like those little things start to add up and you realize, wow, like I really am on the other side of this. So much has changed. And I think it's incredible to get to that point where you're free and there is not that heaviness of, you know, this constantly thinking about food and constantly stressing about your body. Like, it's amazing to get to that point. And I know you've shared so much of your journey so openly on social media. You've shared your passions around healing and around self-love. And like I said earlier, it's opened up all these really incredible opportunities for you. Curious if you ever got to this point where you were like, okay, what the fuck do I do now? Like, okay, I've done this and I've, you know, I had to give so much effort and energy and intention into healing. And now I'm on the other side of it. I'm recovered, period, end of story. And I've shared a lot of that with my audience. I've built an audience around it. Was there ever a point where you're like, okay, I'm on the other side, now what?
Mm-hmm. Many times over. And it's definitely something that's really real for me right now. So I just want to make it apparent that I'm speaking from like in the thick of it, like in the ditch, and not necessarily on the other side to, you know, give advice.
Sure.
But, you know, I think a big part of why I feel so lost right now is because, and you said it so perfectly at the beginning where you said recovery comes with this period of rich relief, followed by a sense of loss, like loss of identity, loss of purpose, loss of people. Because like you said, you are left wondering, who am I without this thing that I put so much effort into? Mm-hmm. And the part that complicates it a smidge more for me personally is that so much of my career and thus self-worth, you know, being pretty achievement-driven, it's always been inextricably linked to my struggle. So before I was doing fitness content on social media, right? It was my struggle with my weight, so quote unquote weight, my struggle with body, my struggle to work out, right? Like that struggle. And then it was my struggle to like recover from that, recover from bulimia. And then my struggle through a breakup and struggle to heal and then struggle with my mental health. And it's always like these lessons learned through my struggle. So putting on my life on display like that, it's been so rewarding in some ways, you know, connection with people, being able to use my story to help, being able to write a book that I feel like perfectly encapsulates the journey to self-love, and hosting retreats, meeting amazing people, doing this with you for like, I don't know, the fourth or fifth time that we've been on each other's podcast, right? Like, how fun is this? And at the same time, I struggle to know who I am outside of those boxes. And paradoxically, even now, like as I'm saying this, it's hitting me that now I'm sharing that struggle on a public podcast, you know? So I think that even if you're not a content creator, though, even if you're not, you know, sharing your life on the internet about your personal struggles, we can all relate to putting ourselves in boxes, whether they're social media squares, you know, your grid for other people to consume, or those like proverbial societal expectations and containers. I think that feeling of like, who am I without these boxes to check? Mm-hmm. It can be really big, especially during transitional times.
And it's, I think it's so important to talk about this because it's so beautiful to go through a healing journey. And I think, I mean, it's obviously so meaningful for us. It's brought so much joy and so much richness and this huge sense of relief. And if you're struggling with food in any which way or your body image in any which way, it is such a powerful and meaningful journey to go on. And it will consume a lot of time and energy when you're going through it and a lot of intention. And that is such a wonderful season. And I also think that it can be a really joyous season. I think there is this idea that, you know, yes, recovery is hard, but I think there's duality in it and there's so much joy. And I think you built this platform because you shared your joy. Of course, you shared your struggles, but there was also so much joy that's come from it. And that's incredible. And also, you know, even if, like you said, you're not a content creator, you know, you have this former identity that you basically kind of died to. Like you transitioned from an identity that maybe was all consuming, whether that's, you know, being known as the one in your family or friend or coworker circle who's really into fitness. And you know, deep down that that was really toxic for you, but that's how people see you. And so transitioning out of that identity can feel really weird. And that sense of loneliness and that sense of, you know, who am I now and where am I going now? And relationships transform because, you know, if you used to connect with other people through diet culture talk and mm-hmm. you're deciding to put up boundaries there, like that's hard because relationships shift, your interests shift. And it's so beautiful. And also, like, again, I think it's so important to talk about this. And I think I'm curious for you in this season of almost, it sounds like you're deciding what your identity is. How are you approaching that? What is that looking like for you? What is coming together for you? What are you pondering? What are you thinking about in this season?
Oh, Jesse, I can't say that I can answer that succinctly because I think so many things. On one hand, I'm like, identity is so important. Just choose a path and run with it and own it and make mistakes and whatever. And then the other part of me is like, reading some Buddhist teachings about how attachment is the worst thing ever and we shouldn't be attached to any particular identity at all. And that's where so much of the battle is created in our own minds. So I think different things are helpful during different times. And you were so helpful to me when we spoke a couple of months ago because I really needed that kind of motivation to at least continue working on what I'm passionate about, even if I don't feel fully clear on if I'm going to be doing it next year, so to speak. So I decided to host another self-love retreat after we talked. And so that was like a action step. And I think in a practical sense, like clarity can only come from action. You need movement. I think that's the way we process emotions. It has to kind of move through you in a certain way. And getting, as much as I think the narrative of like sit with your feelings has been misconstrued because it doesn't necessarily mean like sit there forever. It means sit and do something like write, you know, to get it out of your mind and onto paper and flush things through your body as opposed to sinking into them. So I think from practical advice, action, movement, I told a couple of girlfriends, like, I'm in my hobbies era. I'm going back to ballet tonight, actually, right after we talk. I'm playing lots of pickleball. We're, you know, doing a couple small trips, my husband and I, decorating the house, like doing very like fun, small things that get me out of my head and just like, you know, small moments of joy. And then on like a spiritual, like more esoteric realm, speaking with a friend the other day, she goes, maybe right now, she goes, I'm sure you've received a lot of advice about this, but maybe right now your journey is to just wait and see and be in it. And that landed too, because you and I talked about how like the thing you don't want to hear, the thing you don't want to admit, the thing you don't want to do is probably a sign that that's where most of your growth lies. And so because I'm somebody who hates waiting on others, I'm always been self-motivated. I don't want to sit around and sulk. I want to keep moving forward. Maybe at the same time, like scratch everything I said a couple months ago. Maybe I do wait and just exist and be and see if I can build self-worth around being instead of doing.
So good. And I think those seasons in life are really important. And I think we exist in this society that is so focused on achievement. And I'm such a huge, huge advocate for being in a state of momentum, because I do think there's a lot of fulfillment in motion. And even if that means we might be moving in a direction that we end up having to pivot from, I do think there's a feeling of fulfillment when you're in motion. But I also think that there are seasons, and you kind of have to discern how long you need to be in this season. And you have to kind of be self-aware as to if this is the right season for you. But I do think that period of just being and slowing down can be so healing and so illuminating. And yeah, I do think it's challenging. And I think a lot of us out there go through different periods of life when there's big transitions, whether it's healing from food and body image struggles, or it's, you know, moving into motherhood, or it's a big, you know, location move or career move. Like it's can become super destabilizing and almost disorienting. And I think if you can look around and look at the things you know and kind of reaffirm to yourself what you know about yourself and about your life, I think that can be a grounding technique to go, okay, I know that, you know, I am, for me, it's like, okay, I know I'm married to this man and this is my child and, you know, I'm a Colorado girl. And I just start to go through the things that I know about myself when I'm feeling disoriented. And it's like, okay, yeah, there's these things with my career that I don't know, or these things with, you know, other relationships that I'm trying to build that I don't know. And that feels hard, but here's what I do know. I think that can be a technique, but I do love, you know, I love that you highlighted just being in a season where you practice building self-worth around just your existence. You don't always have to be in motion and in achievement mode. But I do want to talk about, I think there's a little bit of a misconception that if you built following on social media, you must be this social butterfly. You must have this really big community. And we've had conversations a lot recently about feeling lost and, you know, feeling lonely and trying to make friends as an adult. And I think these are all themes that a lot of people can relate to. And again, I think this can be exacerbated when you go through big life transition, like healing your relationship with food. It's, you know, relationships change, a lot shifts. I am curious what your experiences have been with loneliness or with making friends as an adult.
Also something that I'm, you know, constantly working on is building community, having a solid friend group. Mm-hmm. And I think it's always hard to meet new people when you feel new to yourself, if that makes sense. Because totally. You're like, you know, when I go to pickleball and we're making small talk in between games and people are like, what do you do? And I'm like, don't know.
Right? I share my struggles online.
Yeah. Well, the struggle bus. What about you? And they're like, I work at JP Morgan Chase Bank as a customer account manager.
And you're like, right, right. That sounds awesome.
Same. So I think that putting yourself out there can be that much harder when you don't know which part of yourself, you know, feels real and true, let alone safe to share with others. So that's definitely been interesting. Mm-hmm. And I can't say that, I mean, I can't say that I'm exactly where I want to be with friends and community, but mm-hmm. I've definitely come so far in that, you know, post-pandemic, so many people working from home. I've always worked from home. I get gas like maybe once or twice a month because I really don't go anywhere. And what I've found that helps me actually create a sense of community without necessarily coming up to somebody and being like, do you want to be friends? And then, you know, being besties and having sleepovers with each other like you're in high school, which I really do want to get there. Don't get me wrong. I'm just not there yet. But I think if you want to create community, communities thrive off of rituals. And rituals can be literally every Tuesday, I see the same people in my yoga class. You know, mm-hmm. every Saturday morning, I see the same people at the coffee shop. Every, you know, Sunday, I go to church, like whatever that is for people. Mm-hmm. It's not that you showed up to church on one Sunday and you made all these friends. It's that you kept coming back. You kept creating a sense of familiarity. And one aspect that often gets overlooked, but in order to build connection with others, you have to allow yourself to linger. Otherwise, you're not going to be like open and available to meeting new people. And so that lingering, you know, in the online space, for example, it's responding to somebody's comment, right? On something you agree or disagree with, maybe agree with, maybe, I don't know if you'd make friends if you like starkly disagree about something, but that sense of like, I'm here, I'm available, you know, hanging out in like an open body position. I like to guide people at retreats to like have an open body position that tells your brain also that you're open to receiving new connection. And that's been helping a lot. I also have people in my life who I really admire. You're one of them, and my friend Dolly, and just old friends that I've had over the years. But the people that I love the most, they kind of like instantly create a sense of familiarity with people. So, you know, that's where like addressing people by their name or kind of like remembering that they had, I don't know, they went out of town over the weekend. You're like, oh, how was that trip? You know, that sense of familiarity, like we've known each other forever. You can really force yourself to overcome that shy part. You know, you might still identify as like, I'm a shyer person, but just by bringing things up, asking questions, using people's names, you know, just like existing without feeling the need to say something at all times, it creates this energy of familiarity. And I think that that fosters so much connection. I don't know if I answered your question, but some stuff I'm learning along the way.
Yeah, no, it's so good. I thought you were going in a very culty direction when you said rituals. I was like, oh boy, where is this going? This is an aside, but I'm so fascinated by like cult documentaries. I don't know. It just, I'm like, whoa, this is insane. This psychological like mind game. So whenever there's a new one, I'm like all in on it. And when you were saying rituals, I was like, oh boy. All right, here we go. But no, I think you're so spot on. Like we have to keep showing up places and we have to keep putting forth effort. And I love this idea of lingering and being open. I used to be so head down. Like I lived in survival mode for so many years. And when I would go out in public, like I wouldn't talk to people. I was always on a mission. And that was because I was so, like, I was just so focused on making sure I had time to weigh, track, measure, prep all my food for the week and get my workouts in and make sure I got my work done. And it was just so self-absorbed and self-consumed. I couldn't even like engage in conversation with a cashier when I was, you know, checking out of the grocery store. And so this idea of being available was something that I definitely had to learn. And in doing that, I've been able to very imperfectly make friends over the years. And it's challenging. It's so hard. And I have these desires to reach new people and make new friends and explore new connections. And it's still hard. Like it's a muscle that you have to flex. I don't know. I think some people are maybe way more natural at it, but I think that if you're not, you have to practice flexing those muscles. And I think you gave some really great ways that you can do that. It's like get plugged in somewhere and keep showing up and linger a while and be open and remember things that somebody told you to create a sense of familiarity. Like those are such great tips. And I feel like the people that I've connected with over the years, when you were describing that, I'm like, oh, those are some of my friends. They have that energy and that's how we've connected. So I love that.
Hey, self-lover, sorry to interrupt, but do you have my self-love playlist? There's over 300, if not 400 songs on it that are so fun and uplifting and empowering, and I think will really be perfect for when you're getting ready, trying to hype yourself up, dealing with a bad body image day, or anytime you just want a little boost of self-love, these tracks will do it for you. So head to maryscupoftea.com/playlist to get it and know that I am dancing and jamming with you from afar. Cheers.
Curious if there's any ways that you have found, I know you said online and you do pickleball, but is there any other kind of unexpected ways that you found to connect with new people?
Well, I'm sorry, I can't get past this because you said you thought I was going to go like a very culty way when I said rituals. Like what would you have done if I proceeded to like describe a sacrifice that I recently participated in?
You know, I would be like, well, that's interesting, Mary. That's great for you. I don't know if I fully align with that, but tell me more. So you would have front row seat to
you would have kept it in the podcast.
Yeah, I would have been very interested. And I think my audience would have been too. And I would have just had to, you know, kind of preface the beginning of the show. But yeah, we would have rolled with it for sure.
That's so sweet. I mean, I'm honored that, yeah, you would just let me talk.
No, did you see recently the the TikTok cult, dance cult situation?
Oh what?
My gosh. Yes, you've got to watch it. I think the documentary is called 7M, the TikTok dance cult. It's on Netflix. It is wild. It's about these dancers basically that are involved in this kind of religious cult. And these are like pretty popular dance accounts. And it's, I won't spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but my jaw was on the floor watching it. And it's, I mean, obviously it's sad. Like cults are really sad and they break up families and there's like a lot of, you know, psychological warfare and mm-hmm. manipulation. And it's sad, but it's definitely interesting. So yeah, if you haven't seen it, anybody who hasn't seen it, I was floored.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll watch it when I'm in a good headspace because I feel like something like that could make me quit the internet. I do think we are more predisposed to cults now more than ever before because we're not bound by geographical location or proximity. The joining cults possibilities are endless.
I also think too, like all of us long to be connected and to be a part of something. And I think there's people who are really good at manipulation that can create these cults and you don't even know you're in a cult. And I think everybody is, you know, you would like to think of yourself as somebody who could recognize it and would never be involved in something like that. But there's some people out there who are narcissistic manipulators. And, you know, you hear these stories of really strong people who are very self-assured, who, you know, have gotten involved in these types of things. So I think it's, you definitely have to listen to your gut and be discerning. And I think, you know, being plugged into different groups and clubs and, you know, being a part of different cultures is important. But if something doesn't feel right in your spirit, definitely listen to that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think like there's a podcast called Sounds Like a Cult by Amanda Montel, who's a friend of a friend and also has some really cool and fun. And she's actually a linguist by profession. So her take is just really cool. But, you know, I would say that when I was in bodybuilding, like that was a cult of its own. And the personality traits that you describe of these narcissistic manipulators. I mean, I was 15, 16 when I started this. Like, is it not predatory to come up to a young minor girl working out at the gym and being like, hey, have you thought about getting a bikini and going on stage? I'll coach you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a form of coercion on its own. So I feel very passionately about not getting too deep into anything. And anytime I'm getting too consumed with anything, even if it's like the most positive thing, like I've seen some toxic mentalities even in yoga, right? In these supposedly positive spiritual spaces, toxic mentalities in religion, toxic mentalities and very in deep, like off the deep end places. So yeah, that's definitely an interest of mine too. Mm-hmm. Some positive ways to make friendly, non-culty connections.
is have some rituals where you frequent certain establishments more than once. Yeah.
Yes. Frequent certain establishment more than once. You know, that see you tomorrow, you know, go somewhere where you can say, oh, I'll see you next week or I'll see you next time. Right. And making sure that there's like a next time set up. I feel like you're more of an emblem of this. What's your advice? And I'll have a couple more things, but I really want to hear from you selfishly.
Well, I feel like on the one hand, I got kind of lucky because as like I would consider myself extroverted introvert and also somebody who like I'm really content to do things on my own. I need alone time in order to recharge. And that can get to a point where it's like, okay, too much alone time. I really need to get out and I need to connect with people and I need to be social. But my husband, he is a social butterfly. And so when I met him, he was always encouraging us to go do things and hang out with other people. And I would get really frustrated because I'm like, I need to work. I need to work out. I need to meal prep. I need to do all these things. And so it was this point of tension where he's like, I need people to refuel. Like we need to go and we need to connect. We need to do things. In fact, we lived with our We have a couple who's like our best friends now, and we lived with them for 5 years before we bought the house that we live in now. We were all saving to get out of debt and to save for a down payment. And for the first couple of years that I lived with them, we weren't really friends. Like, I was just head down grinding in survival mode, had no time to hang out with them. And it's so funny because now we talk about it and they're like, yeah, for the first 2 years, we thought you hated us. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't hate you. I just didn't know how to be social. Like, I was like a one-track mind. And so I feel like I was almost forced into opening up. And I'm very, very thankful for that. But because I have a bad memory, I can't remember exactly what year it was that I decided this, but there was a year that I told my husband, my intention this year is to be a good friend. Like, I don't know how to be a good friend. I had a really painful best friend breakup from my high school best friends. I had a really good group and we went through a falling out, and I didn't know at that point. I'm like, I don't know. Like, they were just, you know, school just brought us together. And now I don't know how to make friends. And so I made it my intention. This was many years ago. And I just started to do things for other people that I would really love done for me. Like, I just started to try and show up for people. And when I would see, you know, different things online or different ways, like, people would show up for each other. And of course, it was always online because that's where you see stuff. I'd be like, man, like, that's so, I wish somebody would do that for me. And I'm like, okay, why don't I just be the person that does these types of things for other people? And not in a way of like, I'm trying to manipulate you to be my friend, but like, just genuinely get in the energy of being a good friend. Like, you got to practice that. You got to know what that is. And I believed in doing that, that I would cultivate depth of connection. And that takes effort, and that takes, you know, it takes energy. And I think it's hard when, you know, we're all really busy. And, you know, some of you listening might have families or partners, or you might be in a season of life where you are dating. And like, that's all the energy you have outside of work and your commitments is like trying to meet, you know, a partner or a spouse. And so it's challenging, but I do think if you just show up and be the friend that you want, like, that energy is going to bring you some really incredible people. And I know that that's what's happened for me. It's like, you know, I would do things for people that you might not expect in a friendship to do at the point in the relationship that we were at, you know, like, it's a little much for the point of the relationship, but I'm like, how do you get there unless you just show up and do those types of things for people? And so I think through that, for example, I started many, many years ago creating birthday videos for my friends. And so the very first one I did was actually in 2020. And this was a friend, and I just always appreciated the energy that he brought our crew, and just like, he just did so much for us. And I wanted to show love and care and kindness. And my husband and I decided we were going to do this for him. And what we did was we found all of the people in his life that meant something to him, his friends, his family, people that we didn't even know. And I got all of their contact information, and I asked if they would submit like a couple minute long video. And I compiled all of this together. And when we were camping at Yellowstone in the Grand Tetons one night, I pulled out my laptop and we were sitting around the fire. We played this birthday video for him. He had no idea. Wow. And so that happened in his life. The pandemic like really threw a wrench in some of his life plans. Like, he had been saving for years to go on this sabbatical, and he was going to, you know, travel the world. Basically, it saved so much money over all these years. He quit his job and he was going to go travel the world. 1 week into his travels, the pandemic hit, and it just like, it was just really a really hard time for him. And so this birthday video, I started doing this for my friends, and it just meant a lot to them. And I think through that and through just intentionality, it's brought our crew closer together, and we've formed this really dynamic friend group. But that takes, you know, that takes time and it takes energy. And I know it can be really hard when, you know, we're all busy and we're running a million miles an hour, but those would be some of my tips.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think you're so good at going above and beyond for people in general, like anybody who's in your circle, and to make it a little bit more approachable to somebody who's like, I don't know how to video edit, let alone compile this.
You don't have to go to that leg. Yeah.
I just have a couple of ideas. Like, I think you hit the nail on the head where it has to be a little bit weird. It has to be a little bit out there. And my husband actually would fight about this until he realizes that every time I'm right, like, I'm actually genuinely right on this one. And he always comes back to admit it. So I will always do something like a little for you. I think that looks like going above and beyond. For me, that's a little bit more sideways into the realm of like pleasantly surprising, unexpected, and nothing too big. Like, okay, a few things popped into my mind. One of the gals who I play pickleball with, who I literally just see out on the courts, it's open to anybody, and I just see her. I've seen her quite a bit over the past couple of months. We chit chat. Well, she's a teacher and she's going back to school on Thursday. So she mentioned that she's decorating her classroom. And so I'm like, oh, what's your style like? And she's speech language pathologist. So she's has more of like a counselor type of classroom. And she goes, I like warm and cozy. I just love like bright and airy stuff. I try to make my space really inviting. And I'm like, wait, I have this big like wall art piece. It's like a Pablo Picasso quote, like an inspirational quote. It's on this like cream background. Can I give that to you for your classroom? And she was like, what? Oh my God. Yeah, I would love that. And I literally brought her this giant poster. When I tell you it's like 6 foot by 6 foot, I think it's like a giant framed square poster Pablo Picasso quote. And I brought that to her at pickleball and was like, put it in your classroom. And it was just something like it was in my office, but I'm like, I've had it for so many years. I've outgrown it. Like she can have it. Another like weird, also absolutely minimal effort, but one of my really good friends and I over the past year, we kind of went through periods of drifting apart, not talking, thinking our friendship was over and slowly coming back together. And after 6 months of not really speaking to each other, we started reconnecting and our husbands were still friends through all of this. And they had plans to hang out Saturday night. And she texted me Saturday afternoon. And this was after we were like rekindling, like things were still a little bit raw and fresh. And she's like, hey, I know the boys are hanging out tonight. Maybe you and I can go do something too. And I looked at my husband. I was in the car with him. And I'm like, I'm nervous. I feel weird about this. I don't know if I want to like do this right now. And then I was like, you know what? Actually, I think it could be very low stakes and very easy and fun and also feel like no time was lost if, and I texted her this, I said, hey girl, I actually just defrosted a salmon that I was going to cook tonight. And if I, or actually I defrosted it a couple days ago. So if I don't cook it tonight, like it's going to go bad. Is it okay if I bring this salmon over and cook it at your house? And my husband thought that was so fucking weird. He's like, yeah, he was like, you're going to smell up their whole house. You're going to stink it up. You barely talked. You're not that close anymore. You can't just bring a salmon over to her house. And I fought him on it. I was like, no, I can and I will. And I think she's going to be really into it because we both have like similar cultures, similar taste buds. We've always shared that. And I'm like, I think she's going to really appreciate this salmon dinner. I came over to her house with this salmon. She made broccoli. We did some side dishes and we ended up having like a really intimate candlelit dinner.
Oh, the four of us.
Completely unexpectedly, like completely unexpectedly. I think it would have been 10 times more awkward if her and I would have gone out for a drink just because we felt like we had to rekindle our friendship. And so all I'm saying in my bizarre monologue here is that it just takes a little bit of weird, a little bit of familiarity.
I think that if you just roll with things, things will, like most people want to connect. Most people are hungry for connection. And I think we all have such walls up. We have these guards and we're afraid of what people are going to think about us. But I think if we just allow people to see us for who we are and we act as if, like act as if somebody is your friend. And if it turns out like they don't want to be your friend or it doesn't feel right, okay, whatever. But there's like no harm in just acting as if. And in fact, I think what you're saying is like it makes it less awkward instead of like, you know, doing things that you feel like you should do to build a friendship. It's like just go there with people. And if it's not received, like, oh, well. And I think that's been something I've had to remind myself too in the journey of making friends as an adult is like most of the time it's not about you. Like people have a million things going on. And if the connection isn't there, it's fine. It's whatever. Like there's so many people out there. Continue to try and don't internalize so much. And this is me preaching to my own choir is like, I can't internalize. And, you know, while I shared this big grand gesture that I do for my friends on occasion with the birthday videos thing, I also am really good at dropping the ball. Like, you know, that I don't like, I'm the worst with my phone and, you know, like there'll be simple things where I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot. Like it was their anniversary. It was their birthday or they texted me a week ago and I totally spaced. And so I have do these things and I'm like,
I have a terrible story about that too. You're definitely not the only one that does that. Do you want to?
Yeah, make me feel better.
I will make you feel better. Okay. So my best friend from high school, cool. Like best friend, we were attached at the hip. We're still good. She just lives far away at different points in life. Well, she, how do I tell this story? So a couple years ago, I launched my first book. And a couple months after my book came out, I really needed book reviews to just kind of get the ball rolling and promote this book. And I texted her like as a friend, like, hey, girl, I texted her this on April 30th. Okay. I'm like, hey, girl, you know, my book has been out. I would love if you could get it on Amazon, leave a review. It helped me so much. Like, thank you. I sent her this like sweet little text that I sent to all of my friends who I really needed support with the book.
Mm-hmm.
She's not on social media, by the way, like doesn't post much of anything. And I deleted my personal account where I'm connected with all my high school friends. So at one point I kind of like reactivated this personal account and I go on to see that she gave birth.
Oh no.
On April 20th and posted about it on the same day that I texted her.
Oh no.
Asking her to leave a review for my stupid book. I was livid at myself. Oh. Absolutely livid. I felt like, and it was, it's now funny. And she didn't even notice when I like, we got together. She's like, I could not care less. I, you know, just gave birth. I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't care about your text either. But yeah. I definitely didn't like follow that thought process of like, Mary's such a terrible person.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think, and that's like the beautiful thing about people who can be just low expectation. I do not do well in relationships where people have these high expectations because I'm like, oh, I'm about to disappoint you 10 times over. Like the friends of mine who have stuck around and we continue to be friends, it's because they are easy friends and we're easy with each other. It's like, oh, you forgot to respond to my text message for a week. Oh, you didn't see that I had a baby. Oh, okay. No big deal. I know you got a lot going on too. You know, it's like, I know that's a little dramatic, but like we all have a lot going on. And I think if we can go into the world and be low expectation, I think we'll be pleasantly surprised. If we go in with all these grand expectations out of other people, we're going to be disappointed because people have a million things going on. And I think we can fill our friendship cup and feel really like richly connected with people if we keep it low expectation and then allow, you know, the things that people do for you to really, you know, feel sweet and feel special. And if they drop the ball, it's probably because they're not trying to drop the ball. You know, it's like they're not trying to.
I have another amazing friend who always sends postcards and gifts in the mail, like frequently. But when I tell you she's never texted me back, like ever.
Stop.
Never texted me back, but I'll get like a gift and a handwritten card in the mail.
Okay, so I have a question about this. This reminded me of one of my friends threw me a baby shower. I did not want a baby shower. I think that's the most awkward thing in the world. I think all you women who want baby showers, that's amazing. You should totally have a baby shower. For me, I'm like, I feel so uncomfortable being like, hey, come to this party. And oh yeah, here is the list of everything that I want bought. And you should bring some of that stuff. Like you should buy that stuff and then come to my party. Like for me, if I host a party, like I want you to come and I want to treat you. I want to cook for you. I want to, you know, make it a whole experience. So the idea of a baby shower just made me so uncomfortable, but she forced me to have a baby shower. And so she, and then I told her, okay, fine. But, and then it was like weeks leading up to it. She's like, you have not put anything on your registry. I'm like, that's fine. Just tell people to come. Like, I just want to get together with people. So she made me put stuff on my registry. People who didn't come, like her family and all these other people, like they bought me stuff off my registry. Now, I really struggle with staying organized. I get easily overwhelmed. I have a really bad memory. Well, it's my baby shower. I get all these amazing gifts. She makes me open the gifts in front of everybody.
Ah, the whole shebang.
The whole shebang. Yeah. So I did that. And afterwards, she goes, I even got you thank you cards. You need to send out thank you cards. And she like wrote down the gifts that everybody got me. Well, my other friend there, she's like, Jess, like, I know you're appreciative. You do not need to send me a thank you card. Well, she sends me home with the thank you cards, all my gifts. I'm in my third trimester. I'm exhausted. I have a baby. I go into freshly postpartum mode and I have not written these thank yous. We are now 9 months postpartum and I am mortified. And at this point, I'm like, do I just like bury my head and never write these thank yous? Or do I sit down and be like, I'm so sorry. I'm the worst ever. And I write these thank yous. Like it gets to a point sometimes where I think people are embarrassed by their own shortcomings. And they're like, I don't even know what to do at this point. And you just want to like run and hide. So anyways, all that to say, like, people who have come to me and they've apologized, like, I'm so sorry I dropped the ball here. I'm always like, hey, like, you never need to apologize. It's totally fine. And I just feel like, again, that energy is so powerful in making friends as an adult. So that would be like my main takeaway, is just be low expectation of people and you'll watch these beautiful connections happen in your life. But I do want to transition and I want to talk about your retreats, because I have watched you over the last 5 years host retreats all over the world. You've done them in, I know you're local to Arizona, you've done them in Sedona, you've been to Bali. Recently, you're in Portugal. You're doing another one in Portugal in December. And from my understanding, these are places where you hold space for women to just slow down and to immerse themselves in a really supportive community, to learn different tools for healing and to learn how to embrace self-love. I want to know, one, what is a self-love retreat? Like, what actually happens there? Reassure us that it's not a cult. And what caused you, what prompted you to decide that you were going to start hosting retreats?
A couple of years ago, after my Spain retreat, one of the gals who came, she's actually a really phenomenal stand-up comedian, and she decided to put together this entire comedy skit for us and perform it on the last night. And the whole bit was about how she signed up for some white girl on Instagram who preaches self-love, like, retreat, and how she wholeheartedly expected it to be a cult, but obviously signed up nevertheless. And then she talked about her, you know, the experience that she had instead, that she worded it something like, I was pleasantly surprised and somewhat disappointed to find out that it was not, in fact, a cult. But at this point, I wanted it to be a cult because I was there to join. Yeah, well, it's what prompted me to start. Honestly, it was a bout of loneliness. It was at a time in my life where I went through so many transitions, and I was really, I was pretty young too. And a lot of life was just happening, both good and bad. You know, I went through a really tough, to say the least, breakup. I moved for the guy to a different country. So then I moved back from Canada back home. I went to Bali for a month with a friend of mine. I quit my job at a nightclub because there was so much racism happening. Like, it was like a lot of big, crazy themes happening in just a few months. And so after I got home from Bali after that month-long trip, I was equal parts inspired and also lonely, because my following was growing like crazy. And I just came back from this island that is also kind of known for, like, people coming to do retreats there, and it's very, like, spiritually fulfilling. And at the same time, like, I wanted to bring those teachings back and integrate them into my daily life and not feel so disconnected. So my mom, like, offhandedly suggested that I do a retreat. And I was like, yeah, 5-year plan. I put it on my 5-year goals tab and I kind of, like, set it aside. But then I don't know. I think I put it out there on social media. People started expressing interest, and I was like, maybe I should do this sooner rather than later. Mm. And I did a retreat in Sedona and Bali and California, and then a few in Costa Rica and Spain and Portugal. And obviously the pandemic interrupted a lot of that, but it's been so amazing, to say the least. What do? It's a combination of everything that I love. Women, love women, love when women get together. I have lots of thoughts about your baby shower, because I think, and the thank you notes and all of that. But the bottom line is that gatherings are important. Community is important. We do not heal in isolation. We heal in community. Yeah. There might be moments of, like, you need alone time, but overall, it doesn't matter how introverted or extroverted you are. I will stand by the idea of, like, did you hear that elephants, when a mama elephant gives birth, the other elephants are really big on auntie culture. And they're very, like, matriarchal, and they're very big on, like, raising each other's children and helping their sisters out, like, quite literally their sisters. So when a mama elephant gives birth and goes through this insane transition that also puts her in a very vulnerable place as, like, the largest mammal, also, you know, at risk.
Yeah.
They all gather around her and they kick dust, like, physically kick the sand to make dust, so that it creates kind of like this I don't know, like wall all around her so that predators are very intimidated by this like big tornado of elephant dust kicking and a birth happening in the middle of it all, you know?
Ow.
Yeah. And I love that imagery. I learned that when I was on my honeymoon in Tanzania. And I love that imagery because that's how we should be going through any difficult thing in our life is with a bunch of people. For me, it's especially I feel connected to women around us, supporting us and cheering us on and making us feel less alone and sharing and relating and bringing soup and feeding your baby like out of their own tit if they have to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're really lacking that. So retreats and then travel, I always feel so rejuvenated and inspired when I travel. Gatherings, workshops, I absolutely love facilitating and public speaking and creating, you know, different journaling and group exercises in order to get you into that deeper level, that deeper sense of connection with other people. So that's in a nutshell. It's also really hard to explain. It's like, it's really hard to explain.
When I think about it, I think it's like a vacation that maybe you know somebody who's going, but you go and there's this nervousness and maybe this a little bit of fear, but you're going on almost like a solo trip, but to then be connected and plugged into people who have a very similar mission and similar desires. And I think when people come together with similar intention, there's a lot of magic that happens in that. I've seen that in my own program that I, you know, the container that I hold for women. Like when you come together and you have a similar, you know, headspace and desire, there's a lot of power in that. And I can only imagine what that's like at your retreats. Everybody going on vacation together with that similar intention, meeting in person. I'm curious what, obviously you have this large following online. What makes meeting in person at retreats so much different or maybe more powerful?
It's the fact that we don't do it as often as we should. Even the people who are the most connected, who see, I don't know, coworkers every single day and come home to a giant family, they still yet feel disconnected because it's not intentionally carved out time with, like you said, similar intentions and shared experiences. And yeah, no matter how much we do it, I think we always need more of that. I think it is really important. You know, we talked earlier about how we all have busy lives, right? Mm-hmm. And we all also want to make friends. And sometimes we would trade, you know, an hour with our friends just to get an hour extra of sleep or an hour extra of work done. And I completely understand that. I've done that so many times. But I think we as a collective, it would behoove us to remind ourselves that at the end of life, relationships are all that matters. You know, the people who research this have proven this. The people who have literally been on their deathbeds have, if you had the honor of being with somebody in that position, you know that what they'll talk about is always the relationships and the people in their lives. Mm-hmm. And so no matter how much we put into our relationship, it'll never be enough because there's always, you know, more connection that we can create and nurture. So what was your question? Like, why in person? It's just different when you can touch, when you can feel, when you can cry together and laugh together and dance together under the stars and run into the ocean, like shrieking like little girls. Like, it's just different, you know?
Yeah. I love that. Talk to me about Portugal. Who needs to be there? What's going to happen? And when is it?
Portugal is all full. So everybody.
All right. They're okay. That's amazing.
Everybody who signed up needs to be there.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. I do have a wait list though for in case there's a cancellation or an extra retreat. We can link that for people. But really it's for women who yearn to slow down, but can't seem to get out of this like achievement go-go-go trap of responsibilities. Again, women who yearn to connect but feel so in their heads about it sometimes that they just need that extra push, you know?
Yeah.
People who invite in those types of personal growth challenges that if you've listened this long, I'm sure that's you.
Yeah. So
we create, you know, these retreats. I'll host like one or two a year, hopefully moving forward. So yeah, for next time, definitely stay tuned.
I love it. How many people are going to be in Portugal with you?
20.
20. That's insane, Mary. That's so awesome.
Thank you.
If you've listened to this podcast, you've heard me say before that I want to host a retreat. I've been talking about it for years, and every year passes, I'm like, I don't know about that. That seems intimidating. It seems like, who's going to travel to hang out with me? What am I going to do? And I just watch you continue to host these powerful gatherings for women. And, you know, the testimonials that come out of your retreats are really, really, really special. And I think that what you're doing is so important. I think there needs to be more of it in the world. Maybe I can pick your brain one day. We've talked about this, you helping me plan a retreat. Since Portugal is full, where else can people go to learn more about self-love and the journey of coming back to yourself? I know you have two different books. I would love for you to share those with my audience.
I have, my first book is called The Gift of Self-Love, and it's an interactive workbook, exercises ranging from body image and beyond into a lot of the themes that we talked about here. Mm. And I have like a subsequent complimentary journal called 100 Days of Self-Love, and that's really for people who want to have a steady micro journaling practice, nothing too intimidating or time consuming, but just something to keep themselves going, or as I usually like to say, growing on the self-love journey.
And your website, I'm going to link the website to your retreats where people can sign up for the waitlist, as well as your books. But you guys, if you want to see a gorgeous website, Mary, your website is so beautiful. I'm sitting here scrolling it, and I've been on it before, but I forgot how stunning it is. Like, it's so beautiful. I want to sign up for your retreat and buy like 10 copies of your book. It's just so nice.
Wow. Okay. My web designer will love hearing that. I appreciate that so much.
Oh my gosh. She crushed it. Who is your web designer? Let's shout her out.
Yeah. Let's shout her out. Her name is Ashley. I forgot her last name. Ashley Gadd, I think. It's linked at the bottom of my website, but that's mine is a custom design that.
Wow.
Literally, she did this 4 years ago, like almost 3 years ago.
Crushed it.
Yeah.
She crushed.
And it still feels so me. And that was my big problem with designing a website. I'm like, I change so much day to day, and I don't know how to get all these multi-passionate, multifaceted aspects of my brand into one, you know, cyberspace. And she did it so beautifully.
Yeah, she really did. Mary, thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you for just being vulnerable. I know that you're going through this period right now where you just have lots of questions and you're figuring things out and figuring out your next steps, which I think is also a very normal part of life. And I think that, you know, we all will go through that. You know, there'll be many times in life we go through that probably, but I appreciate you just being the light that you are and the encouragement that you are. For the woman listening who is struggling to accept herself, or she's feeling lost, or she's feeling lonely, what's something that you hope sticks with her?
Jesse, I wrote in big capital letters in my journal right in front of me something that you said, three small words, act as if.
Mm.
And that's something that I'll be carrying with me. So I hope that your listeners can also take that, because that was like a big, you know, it's a small but big thing, which makes it feel that much more, I don't know, doable.
You're the best. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
If you're enjoying our self-love podcast, please take a moment to leave a comment or a review, letting me know what your biggest takeaway was. As somebody who works mostly behind the scenes on this podcast, I love hearing from you, and it just keeps me connected to the purpose, which is always to spread the gift of self-love.